Courtney's War, written by Wilbur Smith and David Churchill, and read by Sean Barrett.
It was Paris in the spring, a city built for lovers in the season of romance. And of all the couples strolling arm in arm through the Tuileries Garden on that Good Friday afternoon in 1939, none were as transcendentally in love as the tall, willowy girl and the man at her side, who looked down at her with a smile of disbelief at his own good fortune. There was still a cold edge to the early April breeze, and the girl snuggled a little closer to his broad shoulders and raised her eyes to his, knowing that he would not be able to resist the temptation to kiss her and damn the looks of any disapproving passers-by. Elsewhere, the twin pursuits of female perfection and manly elegance might be dismissed as wasteful, trivial fripperies. In Paris, however, beauty has always been regarded as a moral imperative, and this man and woman were two magnificent specimens. She had a figure that would have had any of the couture houses in the Rue Cambon or the Avenue Montaigne vying for her services as a model, were they not already fighting for her custom as a client, and her face was equally striking. Framed by a head of thick, glossy black hair, her features gave some indication of her strength of character. Her jaw and cheekbones were clean-cut, her chin firm, her nose a decisive line rather than an upturned button. But her bones were so fine, and her lips so invitingly full, that they belied any suggestion of masculinity. And her huge blue eyes, as clear as the African skies under which she had been born, and fringed by thick black lashes that barely had need for mascara, completed the picture of ravishing femininity. He was a mate fit for such a paragon. To her delight, he was still a full head taller than her, even when she wore high heels. Any woman walking by would notice the dark blonde notes in his casually swept back hair and the film star glow of that loving smile. This being Paris, she would also have spotted that while his dress was casual, a pair of charcoal grey flannel trousers and a tweed sports jacket instead of a suit, and an open shirt with a silk cravat tucked into the collar instead of a tie, every garment was perfectly cut, and his shoes were immaculately polished. What the girl beside him appreciated, which other women could not, was that this man's grey eyes were windows into a soul that was more sensitive and thoughtful than a passing impression might suggest. She knew that while his forearms were strong and well-muscled, he had an artist's hands. His long, elegant fingers could draw anything on which his eyes might rest, or run along the length of her body, playing with every bit of her and bringing her pleasure that she could never have imagined possible, only for it to be exceeded by the ecstasy that the most thrilling, powerful part of him could bring. Truly, Saffron Courtney and Gerhard von Meerbach seemed blessed by all the gods, for they were as rich and well-connected as they were pleasing to the eye. It would have taken the steeliest heart to begrudge them their good fortune. "Is it really only 3 months since we met?" Gerhard said. "I can't imagine life without you. How could I survive for 27 years and have no idea you even existed?" "And then I landed at your feet," Saffron said and giggled, "upside down, in a big heap, dressed as a man." When two people are in love, few things on earth are as fascinating to them as their love itself. Gerhard and Saffron constantly found new ways to recount the tale of their first meeting, like children wanting to hear the same bedtime story every night. Saffron had pretended to be a man, disguising her femininity with bulky clothes, determined to experience the exhilaration of the Cresta Run in St. Moritz, even though the course was exclusively men only. She had charged down the ice run, refusing to slow down, and eventually was flung off her sled at one of the bends, cartwheeling into the snow. Her dark glasses were thrown off, and it was her eyes that seared into Gerhard's soul.